For the past 25 years, Bordeaux Index has been relentless in our focus on changing the fine wine market for collectors and investors. Today, we are the largest seller of fine wine and spirits globally. Bordeaux Index, join us and visit bordeauxindex.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Lara Prendergast.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Harriet Hastings. Harriet started her career in marketing and publishing, but in 2007 she created the company Biscuitiers, a hand-iced biscuit delivery company. 15 years later, and they are stocked at Harrods, Selfridges, Harvey Nichols, and many other stores, have two icing boutiques and deliver over 3 million biscuits worldwide each year. Harriet, welcome to Table Talk.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Harriet, thank you so much for joining us today. The question we always start with for our guests is, what are your earliest food memories?
I mean, I grew up, I suppose, in the 70s, so my earliest food memories are probably a fairly traditional kind of 1970s fare that we ate as a family, which in retrospect now seems, you know, I sort of caught imagining what we used to eat, you know, lots of very meaty, lots of casseroles and heavy puddings and the way that people ate then. And what I mostly think about is just how we eat in a completely different way now.
And what were mealtimes like for your family?
Well, my mother worked full time, actually, as a publisher. So we used to have, she used to literally fly through the door at 6 o'clock up from the train from London and hit the stove. She got very excited when they invented things like the, I seem to remember the crock pot came in the 1970s, where you could put all the food in before you went to work and leave it cooking slowly all day until it would be ready when you got back. So it wasn't terribly appealing at the even at the time.
And were you a fussy eater as a child, or did you take whatever came?
Very, actually, yeah. I mean, the other thing I should say, and credit to her, is it was very seasonal. We had a massive vegetable garden. We lived in the country. And it was also the era of the chest freezer. So my mother embraced this with huge enthusiasm. And there was a lot of, you know, being forced to go out and pick the beans and pick the peas and pick the berries, you know, so that we could eat them all year. So in that, to that extent, I feel I'm being a bit unfair on her. She was very much, you know, we ate from the garden, which is obviously an incredibly fashionable way to look at food now. But I personally went through a period in childhood where I don't think I ate anything much except cottage cheese, orange juice and baked potatoes. That lasted quite a while.
Can't go wrong with a jacket potato. And were you involved ever in cooking in the kitchen? Did you learn to bake with your mother?
Not hugely. I mean, there was quite a lot of, you know, cooking cakes and cooking chocolate cakes and, you know, that thing of hanging around and hoping that you could lick out the bowl, you know, when you were a small child, that I remember. So that there was baking, but I don't think that there was anything that sort of created a sort of enthusiasm or interest, particularly at that point.
And tell us about school food. Were you a fan or not?
Not really. I went to boarding school. And I seem to remember that boarding school, you have to navigate quite a lot because it's basically pretty horrible. And you live for that. We always were trying to work out if we could become vegetarians or go on some special diet so we could get our hands on the salads, or, you know, because it was just so horrible. It was all right. And occasionally they'd turn up some chips and then we'd all queue for second helpings. I mean, it was pretty nasty stuff, I think, in those days.
And how about when you got to university? What kind of student were you? Did you cook for yourself, or did you rely on takeaways or noodles?
I mean, it sounds a bit, you know, my sort of, I suppose, you know, interest in food did come much later, because I think at university I didn't eat very much at all is what I mostly remember about it. So because we weren't really cooking, I went to university at Exeter. There was a very convenient van that used to turn up outside the halls of residence, as you remember, in my first year. But yeah, it wasn't very much. I mean, we used to eat in pubs a bit and things because we were down in the West Country. But actually, I think I probably ate less during that period of my life than any other time.
So tell us then, when did you become interested in food?
Well, I think it was largely down to meeting my husband. And he is a chef, albeit an untrained chef. And he started his own catering and events company, I mean, really, when we were very young. But more importantly, he used to cook for me, actually. So it was very much part of the way we first met. And he was an amazing cook. And it was always, you know, I just remember that's one of the things that he was always doing, was cooking these amazing meals. And it's very much part of his life. And also cooking for people And I think that's the bit that I think is fantastic. It's a sort of, it's a form of sort of generosity and love, you know, preparing meals for people, which is very much part of his personality and which he's passed on to our children, so that food's become a very big part of our lives.
And what would he cook for you in those early days? How did he woo you?
He wooed me with things like chicken tikka.
Lovely.
I remember driving up to London from university for his chicken tikka. You know, it was absolutely amazing. All sorts of things. I mean, he's a natural cook. So he makes up recipes and, you know, takes what there is in the fridge and creates something, you know, out of it. Really brilliant with flavours and things. So I think it's also, you know, that kind of cooking is a sort of act of creation as well, which is lovely to see. And so I'm saying it's very much, it's his talent, not mine, but it's very much been part of our lives.
Harriet, before you started Biscuiteers, you also had a very successful career in publishing. You worked at Penguin and Tri-Media. When you reflect on that period of time, what was food like? Were there lots of sort of fun meals out, lots of parties? What was it like?
Yes, there were. I mean, that's when, you know, we're living in London, and I think there was an absolute sort of regeneration of food in London over that period, and exciting restaurants and exciting new chefs coming on the scene. And it was very, you know, I think that period, which was sort of, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, was London actually started to become a really exciting place to live and a really exciting place to go out. And we used to do it a lot, yeah.
I think it would be fair to say that Biscuiteers wasn't necessarily born from a burning desire to bake biscuits. Can you tell us when you came up with the idea and how it happened?
Well, what happened was I'd actually left my job because I had four children at the time. So I just sort of thought I was burning out a bit, you know, in terms of doing working full time. I was still working, I was still consulting, and I was helping Stevie a bit with his business, which was this catering events company. So actually Biscuiteers came out of a sort of combination of our skill sets. My background was at that point very much brand and marketing and tech, actually. I'd worked a lot in the e-commerce sector, and so I was really interested in e-commerce brands and the opportunities around e-commerce. And of course, Stevie had industrial kitchens and an understanding of food and food preparation. And I somehow landed, well, the insight was that food gifting was a really big space. And well, I mean, gifting is always a big space, but also that it wasn't being done very well. So it was trying to sort of think there was an alternative to flowers and chocolates and, I don't know, bottles of wine that would be more sort of personalised and sort of stylish and interesting, and that there was a, you know, that the way that people were gifting each other, that there was a real opportunity there. So I suppose it was, yes, driven slightly by market opportunity, and also the fact that I could incubate this business idea out of lettuce, which was his business. So it was a very privileged, and we had kitchens, we could experiment with, you know, biscuit recipes and designs and things, so it made it easier.
And how did you go about doing that? I mean, did you bring someone on who was like an icing specialist? Was Stevie doing it? Were you baking biscuits? How did it work?
We were working with a friend of ours who actually used to be Stevie's head chef, called Sarah Moore, who actually now presents Money for Nothing. If you've seen that show. Anyway, Sarah's brilliant, amazing. And she very much helped us with, you know, developing both the initial biscuit recipes, but also thinking about the initial designs. I mean, we were clear. We were launching it to occasions, if that makes sense. So what we were starting with was thinking, what are the big gifting occasions? And therefore, what are the sort of collections of ice biscuits that would sort of fit the occasion? And we also took a very happy decision in the end to launch with quite a lot of fashion collections. And that was what everybody noticed to start with, I think, that we had collections of handbags and collections of shoes. And the other thing we happily sort of thought about was, we thought, okay, who's going to ice these biscuits? Because, you know, it's quite a skilled thing to do. But we, our kind of offices and kitchens were right next door to a couple of big sort of art colleges. And so we advertised for art students who would like to come and ice biscuits for us on a sort of really on a flexible basis. Mm. And that has remained a big part of it, actually, because even though now we obviously employ a lot more people and a lot of full time, there is still a really big artistic community among the workforce of Biscuiteers. Because in the end, you know, biscuit, it's a canvas, right? They are artists, and it's the kind of creativity, really, behind the icing of the biscuit, which gives the whole kind of value to the proposition. Mm-hmm.
They are so beautiful, the biscuits, as well as being delicious. Are there any that you're kind of particularly proud of, a particular kind of range that you've done that sort of encapsulates everything that you wanted the company to be.
I mean, I suppose worth calling out just because it's so recent that, you know, we did all of the Christian Dior biscuits for the Christian Dior experience in Harrods at Christmas. And, you know, they were very complicated to ice. They were done in what we call the studio, so which is sort of slightly separate from the main, where all the most skilled icers sit, because we do a lot of sort of work for brands, lots of fashion brands, lots of beauty brands, who really come to us asking us to basically create their designs in icing. And they use us for all kinds of sort of gifting and product launches. And anyway, so that was amazing. And also because it was such an amazing thing, that whole experience. We do a very beautiful bouquet of flowers, you know, where all the flowers, and we change them seasonally according to, you know, the flowers and what's around. And they're very beautiful as well. I mean, I really enjoy, and I'm very involved with the design process. So we design seasonally like a fashion brand. So you'll see that we put out new seasons of biscuits all the time. So for the obvious occasions, you know, like Christmas or, you know, Mother's Day, but also just seasonal spring, summer, you know, autumn, winter collections. And part of the kind of point about it and the fun of it is to be aware of what's going on in the world around you and what's, you know, what people want to see and what's fashionable and what's interesting and what's on trend, and really bringing that into the designs that we make.
Was there a point in the early days where you suddenly realised this is a success or this is going to be a big thing, rather than a sort of cottage industry?
Well, I mean, we were really clear when we started it that we weren't in it to be a cottage industry. We were in it to be a brand. You can remember I'd worked in brand marketing for a long time. So that, I think, very much influenced how I came at it. And it very much influenced the kind of decisions we made early on and the kind of people we worked with. So very early on, before we launched, we were working with a branding agency.
Right.
So, you know, everything about Biscuitiers, the packaging, you know, the way it's presented, the key elements of the brand were very much created and designed before we ever launched it. And they haven't changed massively since then, although obviously it's evolved. So I started it with a very clear ambition to create a consumer, you know, a consumer brand in its own right, rather than to sell some biscuits.
You weren't hanging out at farmers markets.
No, and I was never going to hang out at farmers markets because I knew that I wanted it to be an e-commerce business. So my interest was, because the thing about e-commerce is it enables you to play, obviously, in a massive, you know, it's a very exciting thing, e-commerce, and that was what brought me to it, because it enables you to create your own space. I mean, it was remarkable, really, that I literally sent out a press release and then it just started. So we started in September, and I think by the end of October, we'd moved out of Lettuce's kitchens into our own premises because we'd already outgrown it. I mean, we had lots of problems, don't underestimate things we got wrong. But in terms of the interest came really quickly, and also the interest from corporates. So we were doing quite a lot of corporate gifting, even that first December as well. There's so many things we hadn't. I mean, the thing that nearly killed us was that we hadn't worked out how to get the biscuits to the customer without the biscuits breaking. I mean, we thought we'd worked it out, but in practice, it turned out that they couldn't survive the rigors of the Royal Mail post offices. So,
and how did you work that out? I mean, what was the answer to that?
I think it was a customer who made a suggestion who probably honestly saved the business, and you know, which is that we use icing sugar like glue. So when the biscuits are packed, there's literally a sort of blob of icing sugar that goes underneath that basically seals them, so that when you get a tin of biscuits, all the biscuits are perfectly laid out and will always be the same. So when we design the biscuits, we also design the layout. So in principle, you get a tin of biscuits, it should always be, I mean, not absolutely the same because it's a handmade product, but, you know, pretty much the same. I mean, our breakages are, you know, less than 1%, you know, nothing really.
And you mentioned obviously it was difficult at times at the start. What were the kind of major or sort of memorable obstacles that you sort of faced when you were starting a food business in particular?
The big issue was actually on the kind of production manufacturing side, not so much at the very beginning, but as the business grew. So, I mean, it sounds really naive really now, but I thought about the brand and the idea and the, you know, I hadn't thought about the fact that we were doing something which in manufacturing terms was really complicated and nobody had ever done before. You know, so it's taken a lot to get to the point where we can actually, you know, people said to me at the beginning, you'll never scale this business. And I said, yes, I will. In order to scale it, we had to literally design our own manufacturing models to get to the point where we could hand ice that many biscuits. And also, you know, managing your costs and understanding it in that kind of, it's very, very different from starting a business where you're, you know, buying something in, marking it up and selling it. You know, it's a manufacturing business where it's all about, you know, being productive to some extent, understanding the actual costs of what it's costing you to ice that tin of biscuits and keeping your control of that. And then the bigger the business gets, the harder that gets.
You also sell macarons alongside the ice biscuits. Have you ever been tempted to diversify to anything else? Or have you, in fact, diversified to anything else? Or has it just been the macarons and the biscuits?
Yes, no, we have done other things. So we do other things. We do hand ice chocolates.
Right.
A very unique product. Essentially, what we do is we sort of hand ice designs onto square chocolates and personalise them. We do macarons, as you mentioned. We do some smaller products, like we do dog biscuits and we do cheese and biscuits and some savoury things. And at Christmas, we do quite a lot more things. We do mince pies, Christmas cakes, and shortbread. We do shortbread. Broadly speaking, we're in the kind of, obviously, sweet treat space, and often it's where we can add design and value by icing it. Mm. The reason I think people come to us is because when I say personalised, I mean, we do actually personalise about 25%. By which I mean we'll write something in the icing. But it's personalised, all of it's personalised, because the choices that you're making when you buy it. So let's, you know, if you buy an après ski tin, that's a personalised present because you're choosing it, you know, thematically again for your friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been the key to it, that we can create products that are absolutely aligned to both occasions and sentiments. So whether it's, you know, get well soon and I'll send you a first aid tin of biscuits, or obviously we've got wedding and engagement sort of lines, but you know, it's the idea is that we're designing sort of perfectly for that sort of emotional moment.
Taking away from work, Harriet, what, when you're at home, what do you like to cook, and what is comfort food for you? Or do you like to cook? I'm assuming you do. Maybe your husband does the cooking.
I was just going to say, I'm afraid to say that I do less and less, because my husband cooks, obviously. My son is a chef. My eldest daughter runs the catering events company now, and therefore also cooks and is super foodie. And there are two other children, but really between those three, they sort of dominate the cooking. We live in Suffolk some of the time, and we have a big garden and a kitchen garden, and we grow quite a lot of vegetables and actually as much produce as we can for lettuce actually as well there. And so I suppose what's my comfort food, given time of year we're in, would be probably a Sunday lunch with my family, which is both a moment and a sort of type. But it might be, you know, very long roast pork with red cabbage, you know, from the garden, and lots of fantastic vegetables, and a big fire. So I think for me, it's, you know, atmosphere, occasion and food.
And do you have a sweet tooth? Do you like biscuits?
Yes, I do like biscuits, and I do like biscuits. I'm not like a massively sweet tooth kind of person, but yes, we think about the biscuits, because it is important that the biscuits are, you know, taste great. You know, biscuits are fantastic things. They're obviously sweet because they're iced, you know, and we do spend quite a lot of time now trying to adjust and improve the flavours of them as well. So we have, at the moment, we have a gingerbread, as you expect, and we have lemon and we have chocolate. Are our kind of core flavours.
And Harriet, just to finish, we normally ask our guests what their desert island meal would be. Perhaps yours might be the roast you've already mentioned, but if not, is there another meal that you would pick if it was your last one?
Yeah, I don't think it would be my last meal, actually. I'm much more, I mean, in terms of the kind of food I like, I mean, I was sentimentally choosing the occasion. I'm really much more a kind of Ottolenghi style person. That's the kind of food that I would literally, you know, salads and things they make. I also love, do you know, it's weird, my daughter asked me this question the other day and I was struggling with it then, let alone talking to you. I love Italian food. So I think that my desert island meal might be some, you know, amazing freshly made pasta dish. I mean, I would always go to an Italian restaurant first, given a chance. My favourite thing. We spend a lot of time in Italy and I think it's the best.
Would you have pudding?
No, probably not, actually. I'd rather have, you know, for me, it's always the starter and the main course, rarely the pudding. Starters are great. Always the best things on the menu.
Well, Harriet, thank you very much for joining us on Table Talk today.
It's been lovely to be here and talk to you.